Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Money Talking from WNYC. Good morning, I'm Charlie Herman. With me, WNYC contributors Joan Osera with the New York Times and Rana Fruhar with Time Magazine. So President Obama says the minimum wage should be increased from $7.25 an hour to $9 an hour. Well, here's what some New Yorkers think.
I think the minimum wage should be $12.
$9.
$10 an hour. Cost of living is so high.
At least $11 an hour.
I think it should be more than $9. Nobody can live on $9. Maybe $12, $15.
So, Joe, Rana, what's a fair wage?
I love the New Yorker's answer to this. I completely sympathize. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of debate around this, you know, on both sides of whether it actually helps or hurts the poor or reduces inequality or not. There's a very good study that says for every dollar you increase the minimum wage, that results in $800 a year in extra spending for poorer families who would really see a benefit from that. But there are other more conservative economists that say that this would be a bad thing because it would send jobs overseas at a time when the economy is still struggling to recover.
You know, this is a bit of an unusual case. It's not that there's unanimity on every subject in the economics profession, heaven forbid, but there are two really important studies that have been done. One in the 1990s, and then one in 2005, and the studies say exactly the opposite.
Well, what do you do in this situation? I mean, when you look at these studies and you have these opposite points of view, what do you do as a layperson and the economists are fighting?
Well, I don't know that you can do anything as a layperson except read the studies, which, by the way, I downloaded the other day, and they're pretty long and they're pretty complicated,
full of regressive analysis.
Well, what are some of the ideas that are in there? I mean, what are we hearing? Whether does it cause unemployment? Does it cause...
Well, there are a tremendous number of factors involved. So one of the issues is consumption. If you raise the minimum wage, does it give people more money to spend? And that's a big deal because when you have 70% of an economy that's based on consumer spending, it's important for spending to happen. On the other hand, there is a research that shows that lower wage jobs could be outsourced if they rise and our productivity levels don't rise to meet them. But I think that the key thing here is this is a very, very complicated issue. And all of the vectors that are coming from all different directions internationally make it even more complicated.
Okay, so here's another point, and it's a big question that you hear from business owners. This is Vince Rayo. He's the owner of Village Cleaners. It's a shoe repair shop and dry cleaner here in New York City.
Jumping from $7.25 to $9 would make a big impact on a small business bottom line.
So what does raising the minimum wage do to businesses?
Well, small businessmen do think twice. Small businessmen and women, excuse me, do think twice about whether to hire at $9 versus $7 and change. And don't forget, this particular change, if it goes through, will be the first time that there's a cost of living adjustment on the minimum wage. So it will automatically rise from here on. And I think that probably scares a lot of small business people as well. That is generally the conservative argument. It restrains hiring. It favors teenagers over low-wage adults because you can fire and hire them easily and they're more part-time work, and that it generally has a bad effect on the economy and it doesn't really help the poor. That is the conservative argument. The liberal argument is embodied by what Obama is doing. You raise the minimum wage, you help consumption, you help poor people, you help get people out of poverty, and it's generally a net plus for the economy.
But are there other ways to help low-income families, like the tax code, for example?
Yeah, I could never understand why liberals didn't get more behind keeping the payroll tax deduction in place, because that's just like putting money in someone's pocket. I think that's a really effective way of stimulating the economy that would possibly be less contentious.
Well, let me stray into the political question just really quickly. Is there any chance you think that this could actually happen, that we could see the wage go up?
No.
I was waiting for Joe to say the no.
No, I mean, you know, House Republicans aren't going to let it happen. And at least for the next 2 years, it's not going to happen.
Well, let's shift to the other end of the income spectrum, the millionaires and billionaires behind all the recent mergers and acquisitions. Michael Dell, who started Dell Computers, is looking to buy out shareholders and take that company private. And then you have hedge fund owner David Einhorn, who's putting pressure on Apple, trying to get that company to free up the billions of dollars that it has and pay it out to shareholders. Who's benefiting and who's losing from this sort of activity?
Well, first of all, you can always say that the winners are the investment bankers, right? So
everybody wins always.
You hear the term lawyered up. These guys are all investment bankered up. The deal that I find the most interesting is the Dell deal, where Michael Dell is trying to lead a private equity deal that would take Dell from being a public company to a private company, where he would go from being the largest public shareholder to being basically the largest private shareholder. Now, these are controversial deals often when the CEO is leading it, because there's a perception by shareholders that he knows something that you don't know, and that the stock's fallen so far it can only go up, and they're going to do this and make a killing. And indeed, there has been a lot of institutional shareholder outrage at this, including a letter from one institutional shareholder, Struble Investment Manager, that says the board is essentially allowing Mr. Dell to steal the company from current shareholders.
Those are pretty strong words, steal the company.
Well, almost every institutional shareholder is violently opposed to this deal because they feel that the $13 offering price is way too low given where Dell has been.
But, you know, I think this idea of shareholder value and shareholder outrage is pretty interesting, and I think you're going to hear a lot about it. I'm fascinated by the Apple deal, and David Einhorn is pushing for Apple to create a preferential kind of stock that would pay back higher dividends to shareholders because they have so much money on their books. They have something like 7% of all of America's liquid corporate assets. I mean, this company is just a cash machine. But so what is that going to do for the larger economy if Apple pays out a greater dividend? I mean, it's going to make the rich richer, essentially. Apple is also being pressured by the government to bring back a lot of its overseas money. And I think that there's this larger question of who do companies work for? What do they owe the community? What do they owe the shareholders? What do they owe workers? I mean, this dovetails with the minimum wage question.
Tech companies have been notoriously loath to give out dividends. If you were an investor in the 20s and 30s and 40s and even the 50s, dividends were the way you got money from a stock rather than from stock appreciation. But ever since the stock market took off and the internet took off, there hasn't been a real push for dividends. And companies like Apple are so paranoid, they want to hoard their cash, even though in Apple's case, it's about $140 billion.
Well, we'll be watching those stories and all the week's financial news at wnyc.org/business. You can take this program with you as a podcast available on iTunes. Rana Fruhar with Time Magazine, Jonah Serra with The New York Times, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I'm Charlie Herman. This is Money Talking from WNYC.